This series is about looking at some great stories. I believe that if Jesus was here today, he would illustrate most of his talks by showing movie clips. The reason I think that is because in Jesus' day, the Bible says that he, whenever he told the crowd parables. And parables were simply stories with a point. And so every time Jesus taught the crowd, he would capture their attention by painting this picture of a world. And he would make them look at it and see the world in a new light. He would give them a story. It sounds a lot like a movie. So in my mind, movies are modern day parables. And I will say that I know that not all movies are great parables. There are some movies that we should avoid, like The Plague. They're not great for us to see. But there are other movies that they tell a story that is so compelling, it's something that we listen to and watch over and over and over again. Tonight, the movie that we're going to feature is a movie that I've seen over and over and over again. I think it is a classic. In fact, I am betting that the vast majority of you in this room will also think this movie is a classic. It came out in 1990, and it instantly became a hit. The movie went on to make $476 million. That's a lot of money for today for a movie. That's a whole lot of money back in 1990. The movie was such a big hit, it went on to spur on a sequel, which was also a huge hit. And the interesting thing to me about this movie and its sequel is every single month, one cable channel, at least one cable channel, will play either this movie or its sequel. Now, the reason that's interesting is because this is a Christmas film. So it's very weird to me to be flipping through the channels in September and see this movie on TV. But every month on cable, some cable network will play this movie. And so without further ado, I now present to you our second movie in our series, Movies Modern Day Parables, Home Alone. Check it out.
When the McAllister family left on their Christmas vacation,
did we miss the flight?
No, you just made it.
Yeah!
They forgot one small thing.
Have yourself.
I've had a terrible feeling. Did you lock up?
Let yourself be light.
Do we set the timers on the lights?
Mm-hmm. What else could we be forgetting?
Our troubles will be ours.
Kevin!
Home Alone.
Police in the northern suburbs are on the lookout for a pair of burglars who are calling themselves the Wet Bandits.
We know that you're in there.
It's Santa Claus and his elf.
Get off my property.
This is my house. I have to defend it.
Where's your mother?
My mom's in the car.
Where's your father?
He's at work.
What about your brothers and sisters?
I'm an only child.
Where do you live?
I can't tell you that.
Why not?
Because you're a stranger.
He's a kid. I mean, what can a kid do to us?
Kids are stupid. I know I was.
You still are, Marv.
This is it.
I don't care if I have to get out on your runway and hitchhike. I am going to get home to my son.
Yes! Where are you, you little creep?
I'm gonna kill that kid!
Why'd you take your shoes off?
Why'd you dress like a chicken?
Gus Polinski, Polka King of the Midwest. If you have to get to Chicago, we'll gladly drive you.
Hey, guys.
Yesterday, he was just a kid. But tonight, he's a home security system.
You guys give up, or you're thirsty for more?
From John Hughes.
You know, I got a feeling this is going to be your best Christmas ever.
A family comedy without the family.
Yeah.
Home Alone.
Are you here all alone?
I'm 8 years old. You think I'd be here alone? I don't think so.
Directed by Chris Columbus, coming November 16th.
Home Alone to me is a classic movie. There are so many classic lines in that movie. It is a movie that I quote often, even sometimes when it doesn't make sense. Like if any time one of my friends is going on vacation, I say, have a good time, bring me back something French. And because there's a little neighbor kid that says that line, and I love that line. So like my friends will say, yeah, we're going to Italy. And I'm like, all right, have fun, bring me back something French. And they look at me like I'm crazy, but I'm like, come on, it's from Home Alone. It's a great line. There's another classic line in there where right before the Wet Bandit gang comes to the house, he says, this is it. Don't get scared. So in any moment in my life, including when I went skydiving, my line that I said was, this is it. Don't get scared. I love Home Alone. It is a classic, classic film. I'm betting that the vast majority in here have seen Home Alone. If you haven't seen Home Alone, it's a great chance. The reason is that you were raised in a cave by wolves. I'm just throwing it out there. I do want to just say that that's a joke. It's supposed to make you laugh. I really don't think that anyone in this room was raised in a cave by wolves. I once said that joke and I offended someone. I want you to know that if you haven't seen Home Alone, it's probably because you're out changing the world for Jesus. You're a much better person than I am because I spend my time watching movies. So please don't be offended by that statement. But Home Alone is one of those movies that like everybody has seen. Everyone's seen Home Alone, and it is a classic film. But if you watch that preview, and that was the original preview. In fact, if you've watched the movie multiple times, you'll see that they cut one of the characters that's in that preview, the store clerk, the guy that was talking to the kid when he says, you're a stranger. Well, in the movie, that guy's gone. They did away with him. I don't know why. But this was the original preview that we watched. And in the original trailer, if you watch the movie, they try to make you believe that the point of the movie is that a kid is home alone and he's being attacked by the Wet Bandit gang. And if you've seen the movie, that's the part that stands out. That was what was hilarious. It was unique. That's the thing that got the big laughs. That's the thing that got people to see the movie over and over again. But if you really, really analyze the movie, that's not the point. There is a deeper point to Home Alone. In fact, I would say that there are multiple levels of points in Home Alone. One great point that the film makes is that we need to overcome our fears. And you see this throughout the film. There are multiple things that Kevin is afraid of that he overcomes. And there's other characters that overcome their fears. And that would be a great sermon. But I watched the film and I said, I don't think that's the main idea. I think the main point that Home Alone is trying to make is that our decisions have a lasting impact. I want to show you this through the film. I want to show you three scenes that I think tell us what the main idea of the movie is. The first scene is what gets him to be left alone. It is the cause, the reason why his parents end up forgetting it. By the way, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the movie, he does get left home alone. So if you didn't know that, I ruined the movie for you. But if you did know that, this is the reason why his parents could forget about him in Home Alone. Check this out.
There are 15 people in this house. You're the only one who has to make trouble.
I'm the only one getting dumped on.
You're the only one acting up. Now, get upstairs.
I am upstairs, dummy. The third floor?
Go.
It's scary up there.
Don't be silly. Fuller will be up in a little while.
I don't want a super Fuller. You know about him. He wets the bed. He'll pee all over me. I know it.
Fine. We'll put him somewhere else.
I'm sorry.
It's too late. Get upstairs.
Everyone in this family hates me.
Then maybe you should ask Santa for a new family.
I don't want a new family. I don't want any family. Families suck.
Just stay up there. I don't want to see you again for the rest of the night.
I don't want to see you again for the rest of my whole life. And I don't want to see anybody else either.
I hope you don't mean that. You'd feel pretty sad if you woke up tomorrow morning and you didn't have a family.
No, I wouldn't.
Then say it again. Maybe it'll happen.
I hope I never see any jerks again.
I wish they would all just disappear.
So in the film, Kevin gets incredibly angry at his family, and it ends up saying that he wishes they would just disappear. And I was recently watching this movie with my wife, and she looked over during that scene, and she said, what would you do if Hayden spoke to you like that? And I'm thinking, man, he might be sleeping on the third floor by himself, but he's going to have a sore rear end. Like, I can't believe he talked to his mom that way. And she just kind of rolled her eyes, like, oh, okay, like, that's normal. But the movie, if you watch the film, what led to that big fight scene is something that was incredibly insignificant. The thing that set up this whole thing and the reason he hates his family in this moment is because they only ordered one large cheese pizza and his brother Buzz ate all of it. And he said, if you want some of it, someone's going to have to puke it up. And then he goes to go, blah, blah, blah. And it makes Kevin really upset. And Kevin goes to hit him. And it knocks over the milk. And it gets people all upset. And then his whole family turns on him and starts telling him, like, why they're so frustrated with him. But if you think about it, the whole movie is set off by a really stupid thing. He doesn't get cheese pizza. Well, that leads to the following day. And the following day, Kevin wakes up and he finds that his family is not there. And in his little second grade mind, he thinks that he's actually made them disappear somehow. We know that it was through an accident. It wasn't through hocus pocus. But this next scene is where Kevin actually wakes up and he realizes that he is home alone. Check this out.
Hello? Mom? Dad? Mom? Dad? Where are you guys? Buzz? 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 Megan? Hello? Hello? Rod? Uncle Frank? Uncle Frank, is this a joke? Megan? Hello? Mom? Dad? Mom? Dad? Where are you guys? Buzz? 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 Megan? Hello? Hello? Rod? Uncle Frank? Uncle Frank, is this a joke? Megan?
I guess we really like that scene. All right, well, we're having some technical difficulty. I'll tell you what happens next. He goes down to the basement, and there is a furnace that it looks like it talks to him. And he gets really, really scared, and he runs upstairs, and he's really afraid, and he's, like, looking around, and he's saying, is this a joke? Like, come on, Mom, Dad. And he sits down, and then it dawns on him that his family is really gone. And he says, I made my family disappear. And at first, he's a little bit sad, but then he starts to remember the things that his family said to him, including his uncle, who says, look what you did, you little jerk. And after he pictures all the things his family says to him, he then smiles and he says, I made my family disappear. And from that point on, he starts running around the house and he's waving his arms around and he's yelling, I'm free! I'm free! And he goes to his parents' bedroom and he jumps up and down on the bed and he has popcorn in his hand and it's spilling everywhere. And then he goes to watch movies that he's not allowed to watch and he eats junk food that he's not supposed to eat and he's having a great time. And it leads you to believe that he loves the fact that his decision led to his family disappearing. But if you remember the film, he only keeps those feelings for a little while. Eventually, he goes to realize that the decision that he made is one that he regrets. And he starts to miss his family. And on the last night of the adventure, when the Wet Bandit Gang is about to come into his house, he finds himself desperately looking for ways to get his family back. And he goes to see Santa Claus, and he realizes that it's not the real Santa Claus, but it's an agent of Santa. And he tells the agent of Santa that he just wants his family back. And afterwards, he ends up walking by a church. And it's as if the film is saying that he's just looking for hope. He's looking for some desperate thing that will help bring his family back. Now, in the church, he sees a character that, if you haven't seen the film, you need to know. This character is his next-door neighbor, and he's deathly afraid of his next-door neighbor. He's afraid because his older brother, Buzz, told him that his neighbor is a serial killer who's been killing people for years and burying their ashes in a big garbage can that he then spreads on the icy roads. And so Kevin is deathly afraid of him. He's in the church. Now that you know that, this scene will make sense. Check this out.
Merry Christmas. May I sit down? That's my granddaughter up there. The little red-haired girl. She's about your age. You know her?
No.
You live next to me, don't you? You can say hello when you see me. You don't have to be afraid. There's a lot of things going around about me, but none of it's true. Okay? Been a good boy this year?
I think so.
You swear to it?
No.
Yeah, I had a feeling. Well, this is the place to be, if you're feeling bad about yourself.
It is?
I think so.
Are you feeling bad about yourself?
No.
I'm in kind of a pain lately. I said some things I shouldn't have. I really haven't been too good this year.
Yeah.
I'm kind of upset about it because I really like my family. Even though sometimes I say I don't. Sometimes I even think I don't. Do you get that?
I think so. How you feel about your family is a complicated thing.
Especially with an older brother.
Deep down, you always love them. But you can forget that you love them. And you can hurt them and they can hurt you. And that's not just because you're young. You want to know the real reason why I'm here right now?
Sure.
I came to hear my granddaughter sing. And I can't come and hear her tonight.
You have plans?
No. I'm not welcome.
At church?
Oh, you're always welcome at church. I'm not welcome with my son. Years back, before you and your family moved on the block, I had an argument with my son.
How old is he?
Well, he's grown up. We lost our tempers. And I said I didn't care to see him anymore. He said the same. We haven't spoken to each other since.
If you miss him, why don't you call him?
I'm afraid if I call him, he won't talk to me.
How do you know?
I don't know. I'm just afraid he won't.
No offense, but aren't you a little old to be afraid?
You can be a little old for a lot of things. You're never too old to be afraid.
That's true. I've always been afraid of our basement. It's dark, there's weird stuff down there, and it smells funny, that sort of thing. It's bothered me for years.
The basements are like that.
Then I made myself go down there to do some laundry, and I found out it's not so bad. All this time I've been worrying about it, but if you turn on the lights, it's no big deal.
What's your point?
My point is you should call your son.
What if he won't talk to me?
At least you'll know. Then you can stop worrying about it. And you won't have to be afraid anymore. I don't care how mad I was, I talked to my dad. Especially around the holidays.
I don't know.
Just give it a shot. For your granddaughter anyway. I'm sure she misses you. And the presents.
I sent her a check.
Wish my grandparents did that. They always sent me clothes. Last year I got a sweater with a big bird knitted on it.
Oh, that's nice.
Not for a guy in the second grade. You can get beat up for wearing something like that.
Oh?
Yeah. I have a friend who got nailed because there was a rumor he wore dinosaur pajamas.
You better run along home where you belong. You think about what I said, all right?
Okay.
It's nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you. What about you?
Me?
Yeah, you and your son.
We'll see what happens. Merry Christmas.
I think that it is in that scene that we really start to get to the heart of what Home Alone is all about. And I think that every single person in this room can relate to the heart of the movie. And the heart of the movie is that when you make temporary decisions, they have lasting impact. And whether it's the way that you respond to when someone eats all of your cheese pizza, or it's the way that you spend your money Or maybe it's the way that you react to other human beings. Or maybe it's the way that you react to temptation when you're tempted to something. When you make temporary decisions and you focus on the temporary, you remember that those decisions end up having long-lasting impact. In fact, I would say the decisions that we make today don't just impact the temporary, but they impact the eternal. What I want to do is I want to show you how this point that I think Home Alone makes is made throughout the Bible. In fact, I want to show you specifically how I think Jesus makes this point. This is a teaching that Jesus makes over and over and over again. I think tonight, if you're the type of person who has made decisions and you look back and you're just like, no, why did I do that? Why did I go there? Why did I spend that money? Why do I keep reacting the same way in this situation? If you have some regrets and you continue to not be able to get over those regrets, I think this talk is for you. I think that the phrase that you need to go to and learn is don't trade in the eternal for the temporary. Don't trade in the eternal for the temporary. Jesus kept painting this picture that we live in a world, yes, but this world is temporary. And if you react to the moment, if you react to the way things are going right this second, you're going to miss out on something eternal because one day you're going to die and then you're going to spend eternity somewhere. And your decisions now, both good and bad, impact eternity. So don't make decisions based off the moment. Have a mind that says, I want to live for something greater. I want to show you how Jesus said this through what many people consider to be the greatest sermon ever. It's called the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus makes this point by telling three different examples. I want to share this with you. The very first one, he says, be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. What did Jesus say? Jesus said, hey, you need to give to the needy. But when you give to the needy, give like you're home alone. Don't give so that everyone can see. Don't make a big deal about it. If Jesus was preaching this literally today, I think Jesus would say, hey, you need to give to the needy. But when you're helping out people, don't Facebook it. Don't tweet it. Don't Instagram it. Do things so that no one sees it. Now, that doesn't mean that if you do a good deed, you've got to blindfold everyone else from seeing it. He's talking about the heart, and the heart here is there were some religious leaders who were doing good deeds to try to get everyone to say, you're awesome. You're really close to God. Oh, you must really love God because you helped that person out. And Jesus is saying, listen, if you're focused on that, if you're focused on man's approval and man saying that you're awesome, then you're focused on the temporary. And the temporary, it feels great in the moment, but there's a bigger picture here, and the bigger picture is eternity. And so even when you do things like good deeds, when you do a good deed, don't think about how this is going to make you feel in the moment. Do things because you want to honor God and you're trying to get a reward for eternity. What God sees you do in secret, he rewards for eternity. But if you want a pat on the back, if that's all you want for doing good deeds, then announce it, Facebook it, tweet it, Instagram it. But Jesus is saying, hey, listen, do good deeds. But when you do them, be Kevin McAllister and do them home alone. Do them so that other people can't see him. Jesus from there goes on to give a second example. And in his second example, he says, and when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. And when you pray, do not keep on babbling like the pagans, for they think they will be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask them. So Jesus then goes into a second example, and the second example that he starts attacking is these religious leaders, these Pharisees, who would stand up in public and say these amazing prayers. But they weren't saying them because they cared about God's opinion. They were saying them because they cared about man's opinion. And they wanted man to say, oh, you're so spiritual. You're so great. You're so awesome. And they were saying all, they would use flowery words and they would use these big sentences. And everyone would just leave saying, oh my goodness, they love God. But Jesus says, no, look, if you're praying so that man will think you're awesome, that's the answer to your prayer. If you want to get God's attention and you want God to bless your prayers and answer your prayers, go into your room, close the door, and pray in private. I think a good practice for us is to just say that however you pray in public, make sure it mirrors how you pray in private. However you pray in private, that needs to be the way that you pray in public. So if you pray in private and you're very quiet and you're still and you use short words, pray quietly and stilly in public. If when you pray, you get really passionate and you really like just to like cry out to God, if that's the way you pray in private, pray that way in public. If you joke around with God, if you're like, yo, what up, Jay? If that's the way you pray, do that in public. If you like to use big words in private, use big words in public. But don't start buying into this lie that says, I got to impress people with my prayers, because you're not praying to them. You're praying to God. But see, they got caught up on the temporary. And the temporary is, hey, let me pray in a way that will get people to say, I am awesome. And Jesus says, if you pray that way, you've received your reward. That's all you're going to get is man's approval. He then goes on to give a third example. In the third example, he says, when you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face so that it will not be obvious to others that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Do you get that phrase again? Jesus says, what God sees that you do in secret, which you don't do for man's approval, which you don't do for immediate rewards, that's what God will bless. And specifically, he gives a third example on fasting. And fasting is not something that a lot of friends in my circles do, but Jesus said, when you fast. He didn't say that it was going to end one day or that we shouldn't fast. I think he's implying that if you're a follower of his, that fasting is something that you should do. And specifically, fasting for Jesus meant that you would give up food for a certain amount of time. Now, fasting stinks. It's awful. It is incredibly difficult to do. Jesus fasted for 40 days. And I know the Bible says we should follow his example, but I don't recommend fasting for 40 days. You'll probably die. I've tried fasting for 40 minutes, and it feels like torture. Like, I don't know how he made it 40 days. The point of this verse, though, is that fasting is a spiritual discipline, and some of you in here need to tap into this spiritual discipline. The Bible talks often about fasting, and there are some of you here who have a big dilemma, and you have a struggle, and you're just wondering what to do. Maybe you should take some time out from a couple meals and fast. And the way that a fast works is that instead of eating during that time, if you're skipping breakfast or lunch or dinner, instead of eating, you pray and you seek God. Or for some of you, if you just feel empty spiritually, if you've just said, you know what, I go to church, but there's just nothing there. I don't feel a hunger or passion for God. Fast, because you'll feel a hunger and passion. And if you keep to your fast, you'll cry out to God. There is nothing that makes me cry out to God louder than when I'm hungry. Fasting is a spiritual discipline that gets God's attention. But this group of people, they were fasting and then they were saying, woe is me. Look how hard it is. I've been fasting for a week. Aren't I special? And Jesus says, hey, if you want a reward, focus on the temporary. Focus on what people say about your good deeds. Now, Jesus is talking about spiritual things that people were doing and were messing up. But this teaching can be applied to all areas of our life. In fact, there were other times where Jesus said the exact same thing. If you want to think about temptation, I know that all of us in here have a struggle. We all have something that is our temptation. And you know what Jesus said about temptation? He said specifically about lust. He said, if your eye causes you to lust, pluck it out. Now, I like to think that Jesus wasn't being literal on that verse because I don't want to look like a pirate. I think that Jesus was using allegory to try to get our attention and say, hey, listen, I know it's hard to resist lust. I know there are half-naked women on every channel on TV. I know it's easy to get access to it on the internet, but listen to me. You are living for something called eternity. And it is worth it to resist it in the moment. It's worth it. There is something greater on the other side. Resist it now. I know it's hard, but you resist it now. In eternity, you're going to say, woo, so glad I didn't look at the nudie girls. It's not a direct quote from Jesus, but you get the point. You can apply this principle to any area of your life, whether it's temptation or maybe it's your finances. When you spend your money, does most of your money go to the temporary? Or does at least a portion of your money go to the eternal? I know finances are tough. Finances are tough for me and my wife. It would be a lot easier to not give money to charitable places like our church and to other organizations that are making a huge difference. It would be way easier not to do that. But I want God to know that, hey, you have my heart. And I don't think there's anything that tells God louder that he has your heart than what you do with your finances. And if you look over the last month and all your finances are spent on temporary things that you spend on yourself, it is a sign that you're focused on the temporary, not the eternal. Or maybe it's relationships. People get bent out of shape in fights and arguments. And then it's always interesting to me that if you ask them a month later, why do you hate that person so much? They say, oh, we got in a fight. I don't remember what it was about, but I still hate them. We get upset about things, little things that are temporary. One of the things that always kind of cracks me up a little bit is I do a lot of premarital counseling. And during premarital counseling, oftentimes couples will tell me about the tension that they feel and that they're fighting with the mother-in-law and the mom. And they're fighting with a wedding coordinator. And they're fighting about things that are incredibly important, like candelabras. And they're fighting about, like, tablecloths. And they're really angry about things, and they're killing relationships, and they're going to look back at it, and they're going to be a Kevin McAllister and say, that was fighting over a large cheese pizza. Who cares? I've ruined a relationship because I focused on the temporary. Before you get upset, before you get angry with someone, ask yourself, is this something eternal? Here's something that you need to understand. Anger is not a sin. It's not a sin to get angry. Anger is an emotion, like crying or laughing. The sin is what we get angry about. And there are things that make God angry, and those are the things that we should get angry about. But someone eating your cheese pizza is not something that gets God angry. Social injustices, people being harmed, people not being told about God, people that are in sex slavery, that's the type of thing that gets God angry and should cause an emotion in us. So are the things you're getting angry about, are they temporary things or are they eternal things? You can apply this to almost every area of your life. And this message spoke so much to Jesus' followers that one of his best friends ended up writing a letter that is now a part of our Bible, and his name is Peter. And Peter said the exact same thing. He just worded it a little bit differently. Peter said this, "Friends, this world is not your home, so don't make yourselves cozy in it. Don't indulge your ego at the expense of your soul." I love the wording of that. Friends, this world, this place is not your home. So I know it feels like your home. I know you've lived here for 20-some years, for 30-some years, for 50-some years, for 60-some years, and it feels like you're going to be here for an eternity, but you're not. You're going to be here for a temporary moment, and it is worth it to resist the temptation. It is worth it to live for God. It is worth it. Why? Because this isn't your forever home. One day, if you're a Christian, you will die and stand before Jesus. And you know what we want him to say? We want him to say, "Well done, you good and faithful servant. You fought the fight. You ran the race. You lived for me. Sure, there were some bumps in the road, but you didn't give up. You lived for the eternal." Every time we hear that, we're going to say, man, it was worth it to sacrifice for Jesus. The question is, though, what are you focused on? Are you focused on the temporary or the eternal? Let's close by doing this. Jesus ended this section by saying, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Jesus makes this point by saying, don't store up treasures on this earth. Because guess what? The treasures on this earth are temporary. And when you do something for man's approval to get man to say how awesome you are, that's temporary. It only lasts for a little while. And that temptation that's causing you to sin, that thing that you keep doing over and over again for that momentary pleasure, it doesn't last forever. It's eventually going to leave you. And the money that that item that you're like, oh, I have to buy that. I can't live without that. That thing that you think you can't live without, guess what? One day it's going to end up in the junkyard. Don't make decisions based on the temporary. View things for the eternal, and it'll radically change every decision that you make. That was Jesus' message then, and I think that is a big message of Home Alone. that if Kevin McAllister could have not focused on the temporary, if he could have said, hey, this is going to lead to a regret in my life, I think he would have said, you know what? Telling my mom awful things is not worth it. It's not worth not eating a large cheese pizza. Let's pray. God, thanks for this day. Thank you for your love for us. Thank you for the way that you challenge us to live for something bigger than ourselves. Thank you, God, that you're so patient with us. And even though we're going to hear a message like this tomorrow, we're going to fall. And so, God, I just ask that you would remind us. I ask that you'd stir something in our hearts. God, I ask that tonight that you would just stir our hearts and our minds to live for you, to live for the eternal and not to live for the temporary. God, before we get angry at someone, just help us think, like, is this worth it? In the grand scheme of things, in 5 years, are we going to even remember what we're getting angry about? And God, before we make selfish purchases, help us to remember, God, is this just a temporary thing that the pleasure is going to just disappear? Or am I investing my money in something that's going to make a difference for eternity? God, the times when we're faced with temptation and it's really hard and we just want to give in for that momentary pleasure, God, help us to remember that it's worth it to fight the good fight. God, we ask that you'd stir something in us as we give you our worship tonight. Thank you for what you're doing in our lives and in our church. In Jesus' name, amen.